true or false?
I'm ready.
A small storage room can change the life of hundreds of people.
True.
You can throw a Christmas party with 150 refugees in an abandoned church in the middle of the Danish countryside.
True.
We have all the tools to solve the refugee crisis.
True.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Traveling in Denmark, and my colleague told me, you have to meet that guy. You have to meet him. He has an incredible story, and he's probably a very good person to talk to about the refugee crisis, what's going on right now in Europe. And here we are.
Here we are.
In a community center that you that is one of the many that there are in Denmark now. You were in a group of people who started this project. You are a writer and an activist, and I understand that you got passionate, very passionate about that refugee and immigration story. Can you tell us about that moment in your life where you decided to go in that direction and to mobilize?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I was writing this novel that I simply couldn't finish, and I was broke, so I needed to have a job right away. And I've done that many times in my life, and I saw that in my hometown up north in Denmark, a refugee asylum center were about to open. I had no experience within this field whatsoever, but I was intrigued, and I applied for a job, and I got it. And a few nights later, 485 refugees came to my hometown.
Wow.
A town which hadn't seen any refugees since the early 90s when we had the war in the Balkans.
Yeah.
So it was new to our whole community, and then it just started out. And the very first thing that we managed to do was to open a small cafe, me and all the asylum seekers, and we had one rule: coffee should always be for free.
Coffee should always be for free.
Coffee should always be
for
free.
How does that work? Like, so you got a coffee sponsor?
Well, we figured out if we make a little Facebook group,
yeah,
and we bring ourselves into it, then we have 25 different nations. That's a lot of languages we can communicate using. And then we simply invited friends. I had 700 Facebook friends at the time. I thought, even though they live in Copenhagen, I'll bring them into this group. And I didn't ask for permission. I simply brought in my 700 Facebook friends.
Right.
And then we started posting, okay, we're out of coffee. Would someone be interested in bringing us just one bag of coffee? It would be great. And I can promise you one thing, if you bring it to us, the gratitude will be enormous because we're all broke. That was sort of the very first post we did on Facebook.
Right.
And one or two people, they came around. So then we got started.
And that was a turning point. That was when it started. There's a lot to unpack here. We're gonna listen to another track and dive into this.
Get up.
sense that serving coffee for free and having a space dedicated to that moment, to that coffee moment, was the first fundamental step, if I understand like how you went about this, right?
Absolutely.
Why is that?
Well, there's something about coffee, and I think that's a universal quality, that when you have a cup of coffee with someone, you initially will begin to tell stories. And one thing that struck me as a huge lover of stories was the fact that each and every asylum seeker, no matter what country they came from, had an unbelievable story to tell. And that's really what became a turning point, because in our Facebook group, instead of just asking local people to donate coffee and come around and share it with us, we began to post stories inside that Facebook group, just for the benefit of all the people we thought would be interested in showing up.
Yeah.
And the minute we started doing that, there was one particular story about a Syrian school teacher. His name was Fawaz Tiel Sato. Mm-hmm. Should I tell it now, or?
You know what? We're going to tell it after the next song. Keep going with the that power of stories. I just want to dedicate proper time to that story, because I know about the power.
Okay, that's great.
So we're going to come back with the story. But you were saying that the minute you started posting stories on Facebook, people started to really mobilize their resources or time? Or?
Well, what a great thing about storytelling is that you never know who will end up loving the story you tell. Mm. But there are some universal stories about risking your own life to bring yourself from one place of the earth to another. All the hardships you have to endure if you're on a boat that's taking in water in the Mediterranean. There's so much drama, there's so much longing and passion and fear involved in each individual story. And that's something you rarely see in the media.
Right.
It's always about statistics and it's the
headlines.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But we kind of zoomed in on each and every single person in our little storage room.
Right.
Not because of some grand vision, but because it felt natural.
Mm.
I mean, we spend every day talking and chatting and sharing stories, and it kind of became something that just seemed natural.
Right.
If we love these stories,
yeah,
maybe a lot of other people will. So let's publish them. And me being a writer, it was so easy.
Yeah, right.
When I got back home from work each night, I just, okay, what inspired me today? And then I just shared.
Right.
It was great.
And so, did you know about obviously you knew about the power of stories before. Did you think that that would be the sort of foundation elements of the movement?
I had no idea. Absolutely zero idea. And when we get back to the story that I want to tell you about Fawaz Tiel Sato, the teacher, I think I reached the core of how it spread.
Great.
Throughout all of Denmark.
People in this world are getting organized. You're bound to lose your fight.
getting organized, right?
Yeah.
It's story time.
Story time. Okay. Back in 2015, a Syrian man named Fawaz Tielsato, 29 years old, he came to the asylum center. He was a very outspoken man. So relatively quickly, I got to learn his story. Now, he used to be a school teacher back in Syria. And one day his school was bombed, nothing left. So he went back to his mom and dad and told them what had happened. They said, okay, listen, son, we cannot afford to escort you, but we want you to go away now. It's time. And he agreed. So he set out, he paid a human smuggler, and he came to Turkey. And that was the end of it financially for him. He had no more money. So for the next 2.5 years, he worked as a dishwasher in a restaurant to save money, enabling him to get further up in Europe. He had one destination, or two actually, Denmark or Sweden. And luckily for us, he came to Denmark. So now it's been 3 years without him doing what he loved the most, being a teacher.
Right.
He came to me one day and he said, listen, I know the rules are harsh. I know that as long as my case is being processed, I cannot get a job. But maybe if you could help me get just 1 hour at a local school being a teacher, would that be possible? I can do it in English. I still don't speak Danish, but I can do it in English. Okay, let's make a few phone calls. So I rang an old friend of mine. He's a local headmaster at a local school, small one, just 100 students. Mm-hmm. And he was happy to hear about this Syrian teacher. Yes, of course, he can have all our students at one time.
Right.
It's great, bring him. So one winter's morning, we drive out in the middle of nowhere and we enter the school and all the students, they are already in their classes, so it's dead silent. And then the bell rings. Doors open, we have all the students pouring out, and then I look at Fawaz and he has tears rolling down his cheeks, and I'm thinking, what is he nervous about, what's going to happen, what? And of course I asked him, and then he says, this is the sound of school, this is the music I've missed for the past 3 years. And when he said that, I understood a lot about the asylum system as such, because we as staff were not supposed to ask each individual, what is your passion in life? It didn't exist as a question. But now Fawaz showed me face to face what it meant to be given just 1 hour doing what he loved the most and hadn't been able to for 3 years. So we walked into that classroom and the headmaster, he brought all 100 students. And then we all witnessed a man who was on fire, who was so dedicated, who talked so beautifully about Syria, the culture, the languages.
Did you talk about the country? As he didn't talk about his trip, and
he did. He did.
Yeah,
he did. Pretty much the way I told it to you just now.
Right.
And the whole you know, people tend to, because we live in such a secure place on earth, when we think about refugees, okay, how long did it take? Was it 2 weeks in hell? For him, it was 3 years.
3 years.
Being unable to do what he loved doing.
Right.
So when we got back to the asylum center, rumor had already spread that one had a huge experience today. And for Fawaz, he entered the cafe, which we called Cafe, it was called Cafe Sunshine. So he entered the cafe and he was so proud and he talked about what had just happened to all who came in. And of course, when I got back from work that night, I simply couldn't help sharing that story, what we had experienced together. So I put it in the Facebook group, but this time around, I also put it on my personal profile for the first time. And it was intensely shared. That one story, instead of just being a local story shared with people in the area, teachers especially, of course, it was their occupation, they shared it. It was crazy.
Why do you think they shared it so widely? What is powerful about that story, and to the point that people are sort of diving into it?
I think people could relate to it in a way that was beyond someone fleeing a country. This was someone who had to let go of his family, but also for 3 years had to let go of his vocation, what he loves doing. And now I specified teachers, but in a way this story, I every time I do a talk, I tell this story. And no matter if it's for kids, it's for the elderly, it's no matter what my audience is, people relate to this story. It has some kind of universal power.
Right.
And I agree. I do believe that this story could be told anywhere on the planet and people would listen and nod and think, I would like to meet this man. And that's the next thing that happened, because all of a sudden, when Fawaz's experience got shared, also locally, we had schools calling up the
Islamic
Center.
Right.
We want to meet this teacher too.
We have an hour too.
Yeah.
Oh man. Friends, by now you're all aware of the power of stories. We talk about this all the time, and I have one more coming up in 1 minute. You know, And I don't want to spoil all the stories because I want people to go to your Facebook group and follow, and I'm sure there are so many like this. You said something in the first part of the interview. You talked about not asking permission, and I believe that this is a very, it's a fundamental skill of the change maker. One story where you didn't really ask permission is this Christmas story, right? Where you found out that 150-ish of the refugees that were in your center were actually
the people from Eritrea and Ethiopia.
Right.
Yeah.
People from those two countries celebrate Christmas in January.
Yeah.
Around the 7th, I think.
That's true.
Yeah. And you wanted to throw a party for them.
Yeah.
But your boss told you it's not possible.
It's not possible. Her argument was that you cannot favor particular nations. My counter question was, have you ever heard of someone not feeling sympathetic with people who celebrate Christmas Eve?
Right.
And she said, well, that's irrelevant. To me, that was the entire point. I mean, this was just a happy occasion. It was the perfect opportunity for the asylum center to be a place celebrating, cheering. Right.
Bringing just people together.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was the perfect opportunity. And then she says no. So I set out to make it happen anyway. And I used Facebook. I simply asked out in the big wide open, in 2 days' time, I have 150 people from Eritrea and Ethiopia, and they need a place to celebrate Christmas together. So I need a huge place. And chance would have it that I have this crazy old friend, his name is Tal Litson, he's a photographer. He had just bought a deserted church.
Can you do that, buy a deserted church?
You can do that in Denmark. And because it was in the middle of nowhere, hardly any citizens left whatsoever. And it was all empty because he wanted to turn it into a house celebrating the art of photography. So he had taken out everything. It was just bare naked.
No seats, no bench.
Absolutely, absolutely, like that. A naked room. And he said, of course you can have it. It would be my treat. And it just kept growing. And so many people pitched in. Someone offered to do the cooking. Someone offered buses because we didn't have cars to transport. It was like 25 miles away from the asylum center.
Oh my God.
And it was just such a crazy, beautiful evening. And everybody was dancing because that's how they celebrate Christmas in Eritrea and Ethiopia. Right. So everybody was dancing. And the local people, the few remains who were still living in this deserted place, they came and they were so curious. What's going on? Is our city becoming alive again? What's going on?
Yeah.
So, and all the people who took part, they did videos with their phones.
Right.
And of course, it was shared locally. And of course, my bosses, they found out.
Of course.
So the next morning, they called me in for a meeting, just me. And I honestly believed I was going to get praise. Wow, that's great. You did it. It's beautiful. But instead, I was told, if you cannot stop making activities with all the asylum seekers and return to your office, we have to let you go. What? Are you giving me criticism for making this happen? Yes, that's what we are. Okay, then I don't need to hear any much further because I quit. So I just emptied my pockets and gave away my office key and left the room. And they were sitting like, wow, we didn't expect that. But that's what I did because I simply couldn't stand the fact that they were giving me a hard time for making this happen, making this happen. So, but instead of being, you know, sad and miserable and drive out in the big nothingness, I just had to turn around the corner and walk into our wonderful cafe.
And then I could
announce, well, now I'm truly one of you guys because now I don't have a job, I'm broke. Let's celebrate and have some coffee.
Beautiful. I wish you could see
To move, so move it inside and wake up.
Fast forward a few years later, you were part of this founding team that has created now how many community centers like this one?
111.
111.
We have all Denmark covered, pretty much.
Incredible.
Can I just say, because it was very important that one of the first groups that came on the way was actually for Wastiel Sato, because he was given residency in Denmark.
Mm.
He was hoping that they would give him permission to live in Copenhagen, Aarhus, Odense, or Aalborg, the four major cities in Denmark. But instead, he was taken to a small place called Hobro in Jutland. But instead of being miserable and depressed about that, on the first night at his new place, he opened a new group, Venligborn Hobro. And now he set out to do exactly what we had done up north in Denmark. So he was, for him to be a founder of one of the first groups in Denmark, I think that's part of the reason why we have grown so big, because we have all the asylum seekers who eventually came as participants
right.
and founders of
right.
new groups.
Incredible.
It's solid.
Do you think we recorded a mixtape like this with another changemaker on the Swedish side who's that I want you to meet, by the way. We'll talk about this
cool.
later on. And we were talking about whether or not the European countries understand the opportunity of immigration and treat it as a true opportunity. Because it is. The
it
research shows
I,
that it is.
I
the project like yours shows that, you know, there is so much culture, energy, potential with those communities. How do you see this playing out in Denmark?
Well, I was, just before I got here today, I was speaking at one of the so-called ghettos in Denmark. And a recent survey done by sociologists showed that all the teachers inside the ghetto, they have less trust in their students to become successful without really any justification other than it's their assumption.
Right.
Because all the negativity has spread even to the minds of teachers who shouldn't be colored by that. They should look at each and every student like, you are full of potential. I shall help you get there. But when I told the story of how we grew from an asylum center, there was a lot of similarities because I believe that the asylum center system in Denmark suffers from a complete lack of confidence. Because that's the only reason why I can even think of them calling the Christmas Eve in the deserted church something that is wrong.
Right.
They didn't like the attention. They didn't like, they have, it's like they have a saying, peace and quiet, that's it. And life and action and storytelling, it doesn't even exist in the minds of the asylum center bosses.
Right.
And that is such a huge disaster because each and every asylum seeker has to spend 1 year when they get here. And many centers, they operate from, okay, we'll have you sit here for a year. It's a complete waste of time, it's a complete waste of potential, and in a way it's offensive to have resourceful, strong people who have just risked their lives getting here sit still for a year when they could all walk out to schools and tell us what it's like to risk
right.
your life
right.
for change. I mean, they have the most powerful stories around,
yeah.
and then we don't even use it.
And the music and the culture and the skills that they arrive with, and
course,
it's like
man.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
The storm, it came from across the seven seas. Hold your course, here comes the cavalry. Don't let it get you, don't let it get you down. Don't let it get you, don't let it get you down.
wanna be. December came, but spring was following. I prayed for one that once it came for me. So don't let it get you, don't let it get you down. Don't let it get you, don't let it get you down.
So another topic that we talk about quite a bit on our channel is the psychology of the change maker. And I would like to ask you a few questions about those maybe moments in your life that you see as turning points, like this decision to show up at this job offer in your town at the early stage of that chapter of your life. Why did you show up there, and like, where does this interest come from?
You know, I've had, since I was 16, I've had 47 different jobs, and I've been fired many times.
And you are not 19 years old, I'm just for those who are not watching.
I'm 48 years old.
I've been around.
And the thing is, I have learned that somehow the very low paid jobs are the ones that are most inspiring to me. I used to work at the harbor in my hometown, and I ended up writing a whole novel about that experience. The pay was miserable, but the inspiration was unbelievable. And the same thing about the asylum center. The pay was rotten, but I've never been in a surrounding more fruitful for my inspiration. I don't know if you are aware, but I've actually released a book with all my Facebook updates from.
Oh, okay.
It's in Danish.
Yeah.
Sadly, but it's around, and the reason is, for me at least, that I don't have a lot of imagination. I have to rely on the people I meet to still be a writer. That's where I get all my stories from. It's simply something that gets handed to me face to face. And if I couldn't do that, I wouldn't be able to remain being a writer.
Right. So that's one of your end goal, is to get writing material through life and through.
Absolutely.
And we know a road trip is bringing a lot of stories. We know getting out of the comfort zone is bringing a lot of stories. So you're just like pushing this idea to the max by being around those people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Status and salary, the size of it, never interested me one bit. But if I can get somewhere and work in surroundings that I didn't even know existed. Let me give you one example from the harbor. People were working, me too, in boats. Mm-hmm. And it was 36 below Celsius. So we actually had icicles coming out from our noses. And we were doing 36 hour shifts. Wow. So for that long, we were walking around like, it was unbelievably cold. and but also very, very inspiring just to understand that in my hometown, maybe for centuries, people have had that job.
Right.
And I only found out because I was curious and broke and looking for material to write about.
Right.
And again, I found it.
So starting broke is always a good idea because that's setting you into the right direction. Listening on Spotify or on your favorite podcast app. If you want to see what we look like, where we're sitting, if it's sunny outside or cloudy, you can find the video version of that mixtape on YouTube. Now, Mats, I want to ask you a question that maybe you have this prepared, maybe not, I don't know, but I'm very curious, what did you learn about yourself through this process, through building this movement and working in that sector? Is there, what are things you found out about yourself that you were not aware about, aware of?
Well, that's a tough question, but I do believe that what I really found out was that value for me as an individual, as a human being, is to be given the opportunity to share stories. For me, it was a privilege to, by chance, end up in an old storage room, and each and every day, I heard the most spectacular, life-confirming story. I feel blessed, and it has also changed the way I look upon writing as such, because nowadays, there's no difference for me between posting a story on Facebook or releasing a novel. For me, it's all down to the very same essence of sharing stories.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very interesting. And it's something I think everyone working in that sector can relate to some extent. What would you tell people who have this flame in them to, you know, I want to get involved in my community or do something. I have this desire, but you know, society, you know, put me in a box, or I put myself in a box. I don't know where to start. I don't know. Maybe I'm scared. Maybe I understand intellectually that, you know, life is around the corner. Those stories are around the corner, but I don't want to pop my head out.
Well, my advice would be, and I've given it many, many times, would simply be to find the nearest asylum center. Because I've traveled Europe, I've seen asylum centers in Germany, and I believe they're even more isolated than the Danish ones are. Locate the nearest asylum center and experience what I would guarantee you, that you, by the asylum seekers, will have a warm reception. And they will, if they have any privacy whatsoever, most of them don't have, but they will take you in and they will start making coffee or tea. And then that's where you should ask the question, why don't we make a small cafe together? And to have just one simple rule and try and see if we can make that work out. Coffee should always be for free.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Pleasure, Camille.
We hope you enjoyed this moment with Mats, and we'll put all the links in the episode notes. And yeah, let us know about your projects, about your questions. We'll be following, and keep up the good work in the meantime.